it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Goodman, and you're listening to the fantastic Cut to the Race podcast.
Hello, my name is Brian Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Brophy. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Hello and welcome to the Cut to the Race podcast. Today we are here to review the Singapore Grand Prix. Now the lights have just gone out, so you can probably tell in my voice I'm very excited about this. What an exciting race it was. With me today, we only have Abby, but there's nothing wrong with that. It is just me and Abby. James can't be here and Sam is still on holiday. So how are you doing, Abby?
I'm doing very well, thank you, Ollie. That race was amazing. I'm wearing Mercedes merch, but I feel like I should have two other teams' merch on me as well after the result. But I'm looking forward to discussing it with you.
Yeah, it was absolutely mega. I mean, I'm also in, I'm actually in the pit lane, to the team pit crew's top today. I'm not going to tell you for which team because I'm not biased, but I'd happily be wearing Ferrari, McLaren or Mercedes. So it's one of those, I'll tell you that much. But, oh God, where do we start? We start with our weekend ratings. So on a scale of 1 to 10, with 5 being average, Abby, how would you rate this race weekend in Singapore?
9 out of 10.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
Which is
9 out of 10.
That's my highest this year so far, this season. Singapore Grand Prix weekend is my highest. It was just amazing. And it's not because like Red Bull were struggling. I mean, that did play a part in it, but the amount of battles that we've seen, especially in the race, in the final few laps, it was amazing to have that competitiveness for the lead, for the podium positions back in F1. So 9 out of 10.
Do you have my scores in front of you by any chance?
I do.
What was my last highest?
Okay, so your highest overall is 8, which you've given for Saudi Arabia, Silverstone and Italy, Monza, last weekend.
Oh my God, I can't even remember Saudi Arabia and I gave it an 8. Okay, well, in that case, I'm going to join you, Abby. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. Now, it doesn't get that extra point for 10 out of 10 because the start was a little bit slow and a little bit stagnant, but qualifying was great, full of surprises. It looked all through the weekend like anyone could win this race and... oh my God, did it turn out to be like that? And even with Red Bull having their struggles, they still were competitive in the race. And, you know, we saw them battling and taking positions, losing positions, but taking positions as well. And for me, that's what this sport is all about. So yeah, 9 out of 10 for me. So we're not going to do the quiz this week because it's just me and I'm not the best at quizzes. Abby, would you agree with that? I know that you've called me out before. Oh, Ollie won't get this.
No, you give it your best shot. But I must admit, James and, well, especially James, out of all four of us, he's really good at quizzes. He said before he loves pub quizzes. And Sam's has very extensive knowledge as well. So... We'll do a quiz when they're back.
Abby was like, yeah, let's not bother doing it because, Ollie, you're rubbish.
That is not what I said.
No, to be fair, it wasn't. I said that. But, okay, so we're not going to do the Formula Nerds quiz today, but we are going to do everything else that we always do, including the practice overview, qualifying, little discussion on that. We're going to do the national anthem review, and of course we're going to talk about the race. So let's start with what happened in practice. Abby, any key call-outs from practice this weekend?
Well, obviously, the track for this weekend did see some changes. Four corners were removed and a straight was added between turns 15 and turn 16. So FP1 was more a session of, one, the rookies, Lawson, Sargeant and Piastri, learning Singapore itself, but all the other drivers learning that new section of the track. There were a lot of lizards on track in FP1, yellow flags coming out, and everyone was a bit confused because no cars were stopped, but lizards were on track. Some drivers had moments going over the curbs. Stroll had limited running in FP1 because the team needed to take off the aero rake probes from the side pods. And it was Leclerc, Sainz and Verstappen fastest in FP1. FP2, not a lot happened. Albon had an issue with the loss of power, so came in. But it was Sainz, Leclerc and Russell in the top three. And then FP3, Lawson suffered a spin in sector one. Albon got close to the wall and Verstappen continued his complaints about issues with the car. And it was Sainz, Russell, Norris fastest. So Ferrari were looking to be rather strong here in Singapore.
Yeah, so I think, you know, as we've said, it was looking like it's up for grabs this weekend. There were a lot of different drivers performing well. But what I want to ask you about, Abby, is what do you think of these track changes? So my personal view, they've taken out four corners. Essentially, it's almost like a sort of rectangle area. Very, very descriptive there. In order to create, as Danica Patrick would call it, a straightaway, but just a long straight. Now, those corners they've taken out were primarily where the safety car would normally come, for instance, around those. And as a result of taking those out, lap times were about 10 seconds faster, I believe, meaning the Grand Prix wasn't as long. But I'm not sure I like it. I think I liked it how it was before. Do you know a reason why they took them out?
No, I don't know the specific reason for taking it out. I think with it having the added straight and added DRS zone, I thought it would play into the hands of Red Bull because they have had very powerful DRS throughout this whole season. Obviously, they said that Singapore wasn't a strong track for them as a team, and that clearly was conveyed over the weekend. I'm kind of like on the fence with the track changes. I'm not against them. I'm not for them at the moment. I feel like we need to see a couple more races at Singapore with the added straight to get the full benefit of what it can bring. Obviously, it made the whole race 62 laps instead of 61. And you say about the four corners before being where the safety car was primarily brought out. We saw a safety car and a VSC in today's race. And I feel like at the moment it pushes the drivers to be a little bit more on the edge, having another straight and pushing it to the limits, going 10 seconds faster, like you say. But I'm not really sure how I feel about them completely yet.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what they removed was the sequence of corners essentially that went underneath the grandstand, which was quite an iconic sort of shot of Singapore, seeing an F1 car go under a grandstand, which I've always thought was just epic, which went into sort of the marina area. But what it also meant was that, you know, the teams didn't have any data in terms of tyre degradation and how that would impact it. And I think that the interesting part of those practice sessions was, right, okay, we've been in Singapore since, I can't remember when, but a long time. Now, how's this going to change it for the tyre wear and, you know, the race strategy, essentially? But all in all, it seemed to work. It seemed to do its thing. And again, I've even just had a look and I can't find a reason why they changed it, but they did. Okay, do we want to talk about qualifying, Abby?
Yes, definitely. So, Q1, Ferrari were continuing their strong form. Obviously, all teams apart from Haas have brought upgrades to this weekend, and Ferrari's definitely seem to be working. Tsunoda went fastest overall at one point in the AlphaTauri, but the main talking point from Q1 was the red flag that ended the session early and delayed the start of Q2, and it was Lance Stroll going into the final corner, heading down the main straight. He had a 150-mile crash into the wall. He is okay. He made it out of the car, but he was unable to race in the Grand Prix today. But that did mean that it was Bottas, Piastri, Sargeant, Zhou and Stroll out of Q1.
Yeah, so watching on board with Lance Stroll's lap, it looked like he was struggling all the way around, and almost he was overdriving the car. And I don't know about you, Abby, but when I was watching it, because the actual F1 feed was on Stroll as it happened, but I almost saw the future. I just knew it was going to happen because there were just kicks of oversteer everywhere. And as he went over that the raised corner on the final corner, it just unsettled the car. As soon as it settled again, his wheels were pointing towards the barriers that he hit. But I mean, that was a terrifying crash. Watching it live was absolutely terrifying. That his head was shaking all over the place, and I haven't seen any reports of the G-force. But he was lucky, to walk away from that. And it's such a testament to safety in motorsport.
It definitely is. I think it was Brundle who said on the commentary feed, if that crash would have happened 15, 20 years ago, it would have been a different outcome and it would have been a different story. So thankfully, the safety of F1 has improved and Stroll was okay. But yeah, it was terrifying watching it. Like you say, his head was going back and forth, side to side so quickly that I can't imagine the pressure and the pain that he was going through at that moment. And I've seen on social media fans' videos from being in that grandstand and then seeing his car coming and smashing the wall and spinning into the track. And also for the cars that were coming round behind Stroll, I think it was the McLaren, I want to say Piastri, that was a close call also to just avoid the debris of Stroll's car. But yeah, terrifying when that happens and live as well.
Yeah, absolutely, because there's no hiding it when it's live. And as you said, he didn't take part in the race on Saturday. So I've got the statement from the Aston Martin team. And they said, following Lance's crash in qualifying for the Singapore Grand Prix, Lance and the Aston Martin Aramco Cognizant Formula One team have jointly agreed that he will not participate in this evening's race, obviously being today. The team face a huge job repairing the car today, and Lance is still sore following such a high impact. Lance's focus now fully shifts to recovering ahead of the Japanese Grand Prix. I was thinking, why don't they put the reserve driver in? Why don't they put Djokovic in the car? Do you think this is a case of Lance actually is, number one, he's really shaken up by it because that must have been terrifying, and number two, they couldn't repair the car in time?
I think so. Obviously, the damage to the Aston Martin car was quite immense after the crash for Stroll. And he's had a couple of weekends recently, and he doesn't seem to be quite as on form as Alonso. And I think Singapore, it is a tough race, especially in the heat. And then Suzuka next weekend, that is also quite a tough race as well. And I think he needs that time to reset and just make sure that he is okay to race in Japan. But with the rookies, I think it is, do they need to complete a practice session and a qualifying session to have been able to race today? I feel like...
I don't know.
I think they need to. But yeah, so Aston Martin did only run one car, and unfortunately, the weekend didn't improve much.
Well, we did do an entire episode about Lance Stroll the other day and our thoughts on it. So we won't go on too much, but I do feel like this may be another part to the story and maybe another part to why he may not remain in the sport. Personally, I feel if your head's not 100% in it, as we may suspect, and then you hit a wall at 150 miles an hour, it's just going to put things back into perspective of, why am I doing this? Do I want to continue doing it? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But let's move on to Q2, Abby.
Well, Q2 was the first time that Williams got into Q2 in Singapore since 2016. Obviously, it was Albon that made it through. But the interesting thing was, both Red Bulls were in danger. Perez set a lap time, and he could only go 13th after making a mistake at turn three. Verstappen managed to improve, and he got into 10th. However, Liam Lawson, in his third Formula One race weekend in an AlphaTauri, beat Verstappen in the Red Bull and knocked Verstappen out. So it was Verstappen, Gasly, Perez, Albon, and Tsunoda out in Q2.
And I mean, there's a lot to talk about here, isn't there? Number one, the world champion, double world champion, Max Verstappen being knocked out. Now, I think we could see that it wasn't going to be a good weekend, but oh boy, I didn't expect both. Well, actually, I did expect Perez to go out in Q2, but I didn't expect Verstappen to go out in Q2. And more so to be beaten by a rookie in, is it his third race now? Second race. It is his third. Yeah, his third race. I mean, what a result for Liam Lawson. Kind of ironic that he's done it in AlphaTauri, which is the sister team of Red Bull. I imagine Dr. Helmut Marko had a few words to say. But at the end of the day, if Liam Lawson is able to perform to that level and knock another driver out, it is what it is, really. What's your thoughts on Liam Lawson, you know, so far in F1, Abby?
He's done amazingly. I think I was talking to my dad earlier and comparing him to Sargent, because Sargent had one season in F2 and is coming to F1 and hasn't really like peaked yet. He hasn't got that drive that's enabling him to get points and perform as well as his teammate. Whereas Lawson, he had a couple of years in F2. He's raced in other championships. He's currently racing in the Super Formula Series this year. And he's come into F1, thrown into the car in the middle of a weekend. And now in Singapore, his third race, he's a rookie and he scored points in Singapore, which no rookie has ever done before. No one scored maiden points in Singapore. And he put up a hell of a drive. He is performing so well. And I think he deserves a seat next year. I must say, he is doing really well.
Yes, he is indeed. And also what surprised me was how quick the Hasses were going in Q2. But let's move on to Q3.
Well, with both Red Bulls out, the only Red Bull driver in Q3 was Lawson, even though AlphaTauri, but you know. But then it was a battle for the pole. And it was a battle between both Ferraris, Lando Norris and George Russell, because all of them went fastest at one point in the session. But it was Carlos Sainz who took pole position, a consecutive pole position from Monza to Singapore, which is exactly what Ferrari did in 2022. And it was Russell on the front row in P2, Leclerc P3, Norris P4, Hamilton P5, Magnussen P6, Alonso P7, Ocon P8, Hülkenberg P9, and Lawson in 10th.
Yeah, I mean, Ferrari, they just seem like they may have tweaked whatever those issues were that they were having. It was pretty clear throughout the entire weekend that, you know, Ferrari were going to be contenders for pole. And I was also surprised to see the difference between Russell and Hamilton, if I'm honest, because it did seem like Carlos was always the Ferrari that were, you know, if a Ferrari was going to get pole, that it was going to be Carlos. But obviously, having such a big gap between the Mercedes of nearly half a second, that is a big gap in qualifying, especially, you know, for Lewis Hamilton. Both of those Hasses in there absolutely mega, with, you know, Magnussen in P6 and Hülkenberg in P9. But yeah, what a response from Carlos Sainz to get that pole. And I mean, it was close. It was 0.072 between Russell and Carlos Sainz, but that also meant that Russell would start on the dirty side of the grid.
It did. And it was just so good to see. And I think not having, like, when Red Bulls are in, well, when Max is in Q3, I'm kind of like, okay, he's going to get pole because he's in the fastest car. He's one of the best drivers on the grid. It's easier for him to get pole. But without them in Q3, it was just a fight till the end. And Sainz has done amazingly all weekend. He was strong in practices, strong in qualifying, and it was so close. But it made for a really exciting race because of all the drivers that you had up the front: Sainz, Russell, Leclerc, Norris, Hamilton, both Hasses, like you say. Alonso was further back. It felt like a lot of drivers were out of position, which then was like, so what's going to happen in the race?
Yeah, naturally, it's sort of displacement, isn't it? When the Red Bulls aren't there, right, who's going to be there to take it? And one driver I particularly felt sorry for was Piastri, because the McLarens were clearly on form. And we do know that Lando Norris had some more upgrades than Piastri did for this weekend in that stealth liveried McLaren, which, by the way, absolutely looked mega. But Lando Norris qualifying P4 and Piastri all the way back in, where did he? P17 because of the crash with Stroll. I really felt for him because, you know, he was milliseconds away from being up there with those boys, and I would have loved to see what they could have done.
Definitely, definitely. And as you say, McLaren, I think, had 9 upgrades and Lando's car was the one with all of them. Piastri will get all of them in Suzuka. But it was a shame. His qualifying was cut early because of the crash in Q1. And like you say, it would have been great to see what he could have done and just how much difference all the upgrades made compared to a few of them between the difference of the McLaren cars.
Yeah, so I did read somewhere, obviously the stealth livery for McLaren, it was because the new parts, they're actually heavier and they needed to get the weight off the car. So it was more of a convenient thing to make a carbon fibre livery than paint it all orange again and have a heavier car. I mean, how much do you read into that, Abby?
It could be true. It could not. I mean, I like the livery. The upgrades clearly work. So, you know, keep both of them, as far as I'm concerned.
I think the only other thing that we can sort of talk about before we get into the race is the new technical directive. Now, there's a lot of conspiracies and rumours that since they had launched this technical directive, that this was what was causing Red Bull the issues, that they'd had to change the car to some aspect. What do you read into that? Obviously, Red Bull have said, no, we didn't change anything on the car. We haven't had to. I think a lot of people along the paddock are saying, yeah, it's the same car as normal. But we don't know that. And for such a huge turn of performance for Red Bull, do you think there's more than just it was a bad weekend?
Potentially. Obviously, they bought a new floor edge and a new rear wing end plate to this weekend. And they've said all along that Singapore is going to be a tricky circuit for them. However, the new technical directive focuses on the flexible bodywork of the car, making sure that everything is fair and it's equal and there's transparency throughout the grid. And I just find it interesting because in F1, we've had it before where a team can be so dominant and then halfway through a season, they suddenly drop off. And yes, Red Bull have continued their dominance throughout the first half and into the second half of the season. But they were so strong in Monza, well, throughout the rest of the season, as we know, but they were so strong in Monza. And then a week later, they suddenly had this massive drop off when this new technical directive has come in. And Singapore's a street track and they were so dominant in the past street tracks of this season. They won them, obviously. I think Perez won Jeddah and Baku. Max won Monaco. So it does beg the question of whether they've been forced to change something because of this technical directive. They're not going to necessarily say that to everyone and be like, oh yeah, so this has come in and we've had to change this and change this and that's why we're slow. They're not going to admit it. But like you say, unless you're part of the Red Bull team, you're not actually going to know what has changed on the car.
Yeah, one of our team, they actually made a good point. They said if they had to change something, Christian Horner would have been out to the media saying, oh, the FIA is trying to slow us down, this, that, and the other. He would have used it as, you know, something to talk about, not just brush it off. And I kind of see that. I kind of see, you know, in the past where we've seen changes of regulations and things like this, you know, with rear wings, especially flexi wings again in the past. The teams are first to talk up and say, oh, this is absolutely ridiculous. He said this, he said that. And especially if it's costing them performance, they'll blame it on that. But that hasn't happened. And I think, you know, it's interesting if you look back over the years, you know, Red Bull didn't have a good race here last year, yet they were still dominant. And when Mercedes were dominant, they didn't have a great race in Singapore either. I feel like it might just be the track. There might just be something there, which it's very, very difficult to put your finger on what it is about Singapore. Now, I remember years ago, they were talking about something to do with electrical lines or electrical interference underneath the track that was causing radios and telemetry to play up. But there might just be something else. It might just be the humidity.
Yeah, it could be anything. And I think the only way we'll know is when it comes to next weekend and whether Red Bull are still on the back foot and still having these issues, because they did struggle a lot throughout the whole weekend, not just in qualifying laps, but through the race as well. So I think we'll have to wait till Suzuka. If they're back on form with pole winning the race, then Singapore is their weakest circuit. If not, who knows?
Indeed. Only time will tell. But it is that time of the week where we do the world famous national anthem review.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Okay, so this one was a bit, I'm going to say, mediocre would be the way I would put this one. It was performed by, I believe, cabin crew from the Singapore Airlines airline. I couldn't quite find the word there. But I couldn't quite work out, Abby. And now tell me if you noticed this. Were they miming it? Because it really looked like they were.
See, I had that same thought because I was watching it and I was like, you look like you're mouthing words, but I'm not hearing those words right at this moment. It did look out of sync, which did let it down for me. It wasn't the best national anthem. It wasn't the worst one, but it didn't look right because I feel like they were miming it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could have been an audio delay. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say it was just a delay from the audio to the visual feed. We sometimes see that where you can hear things in the crowd before you hear it on the actual feed. Either way, it did look a bit weird out of sync. It was like watching, you know, Netflix at the moment seems to have so many films in different languages. And when you watch the Englishman speaking over the top of a French film, it just doesn't line up, and it's very weird to watch, and that's how I felt about this one. All right, Abby, what would you give it out of 10, and why?
Okay, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 because it was average. They might have been miming it, but like you say, it might have been an audio delay. It wasn't anything special for me, so 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5.5. Why not? I felt like they were being very patriotic about their airline and to get their stewards and stewardesses, you know, off the planes for a day and onto the Singapore Grand Prix circuit. I thought that was nice. You know, it's something they're clearly proud of. And if they were singing, they did a good job of it. So that was the mediocre national anthem review. Let's get on to the race. So, Abby, talking about the race, let's get into the first, well, the start of the race. What did you make of it?
It was good. I feel like the beginning of the race, it held so much promise, but it didn't arrive until like 3/4 of the way into it. But at the beginning, you had both Red Bull drivers and Valtteri Bottas on the hard tyres, Leclerc, Tsunoda, Piastri and Joubert on the softs, and then everybody else was on the mediums. And as the lights went out, Carlos Sainz had an amazing reaction time and managed to keep the lead. Leclerc managed to get ahead of Russell. And then there was a little bit of a scrap between Hamilton, Norris and Russell, because Hamilton, he got ahead of Norris into the corner, but then he was trying to go side by side with Russell to get ahead, but he ended up going off the track and then he had to give the places back to Russell and Norris as well. Verstappen made up some places, which isn't surprising. And then a couple of laps in, there were yellow flags for Yuki Tsunoda because he did stop on track, but he was very nice about it because he managed to pull off into the runoff area and had his car out of the way so the race could carry on. But he retired because he got a puncture after contact with Perez, which caused Perez to lose his front left end plate, I believe, of the front wing. So
I almost wish he had parked it in the middle of the road because it would have made brought the safety car out being a bit more exciting. The start of this race was definitely not one for the record books, but talk about the Hamilton saga. I mean, he definitely gained an advantage. There was absolutely no doubting it. I was actually watching it thinking, what are you doing? Surely you're just going to give your teammate back. Like, I wasn't even thinking about Norris at that point. But he just... He doesn't need corners. It was just bizarre.
It was. And yeah, he definitely gained an advantage over Russell. I think he looked so in control with it, which is why I think Norris was like, well, he needs to give it back to me, because he deliberately like went off track. It wasn't, oh, he's locked up and went off track. But yeah, I'm glad he did manage to get the spaces back rather than being given a 5-second penalty on the opening lap, because the race was only just getting started and there were like 62 more laps to go. So,
Yeah, I mean, we always see drivers at the start of the race in Singapore going off over there. It was just the manner in which he did it so fast, like his foot was planted to the floor. And then, yeah, it was only when the FIA, well, the stewards said, yeah, we're looking at this. Oh, okay, have the places back. I'm sorry. You know, he was going to chance it for as long as he could. But that's what you do, right? You're a racing driver. You're not going to go, oh, why don't you go as well, mate? Actually, you could have, yeah, you pass as well. You just don't exactly. Do it, especially not in Singapore where it's so difficult to overtake.
Exactly that.
So we did have a crash. We had a few today, but the first one was Logan Sargeant, I believe.
Yes, it was on lap 19. And when I first saw this, I thought it was very bizarre because Sargeant down the straight at turn 8 into the barriers and he lost his front wing and then... He managed to keep going, but he captured part of the front wing under the left-hand side of his car and then was dragging it along the track as he was making his way back to the pit, and debris was flying everywhere.
Not Nick DeVries, by the way.
No. Did I say Nick DeVries?
No. Do you remember when Carlos Sainz last year said...
Oh, yes.
Sorry. Okay. Bad joke, Ollie. Yeah, it was the Financial Times front wing of the Williams that was dragging along, wasn't it? Great promo for them, this was.
It was, and it took a while for the safety car to come out. I thought they were going to call it, like, straight away, but they didn't. But on lap 20, the next lap, that was when the pit stops began for the front runners.
Yeah, so, this really confused me, this safety car, Abby, because he'd had the crash. They hadn't done anything. He drove around with his Financial Times front wing all the way around the circuit. I'm sure they'll be re-sponsoring him next year, by the way. And just as he got into the pit lane, oh, now we need a safety car. And there wasn't much talk of why. Now, you can only assume it was because of Nick debris. But, yeah, it just seemed like even F1 knew at this point, nothing's happened in this race whatsoever. We've got a small opportunity here, a very small opportunity to try and make this a little bit more interesting. And I mean, it certainly did, but it did feel a bit manufactured to me.
Yes. I was sitting watching it going, oh, why aren't you calling a safety car? You need to call a safety car. There's no safety car. Why isn't there a safety car? Oh, okay. Now you've called the safety car. So it did seem a bit delayed, but it did spice things up because Leclerc, who had previously been told to back up a bit from Sainz and hold those up behind him, both of them came into the pit, Sainz and Leclerc, and it was to allow a Ferrari double stack. Mercedes then both came into the pits to do a double stack. Norris also came into the pits, as well as several other drivers. But Norris managed to pit Leclerc because Leclerc was held in the pits to let Hamilton enter his pit box. So it then rearranged the order coming out. So you had Sainz in first, then Verstappen, because he didn't pit, Russell in third, Norris was in fifth, Leclerc was in sixth, and Hamilton in seventh. So it did mess it up because it was good for Sainz, but Ferrari sacrificed Leclerc.
Yeah, I mean, it really screwed over Leclerc really badly. And it felt like, obviously, he was the sacrificial lamb to keep Carlos Sainz at the front, which was fine. And I feel like at that point, yeah, Leclerc's race was over. It turned out like he could have done a bit better in the end. But obviously, they had to keep the Red Bulls out as well because they were on the hards and that would have interfered with their strategy. But Red Bull staying out was really betting on another safety car and, you know, then being able to change the tyres under that. But that Red Bull was like driving on ice towards the end of that stint, wasn't it?
It was. And I believe that is what Max Verstappen said as well, driving on ice.
I wondered where it came from, yeah.
But yes, they started on the hards, so their strategy needed a safety car. But like you say, they had the first one. It was way too early for them to come into the pits and change tyres at that point, so they did have to wait for another one. One of the interesting things I thought was Alonso, because he's had such a great season, but this weekend didn't go great for him. And then when he was coming into the pits, he locked up, went over the white line, then crossed back over the white line to enter the pits, which obviously you're not allowed to do. So he got a penalty. So his race was also not going the way that he wanted.
Yeah, and it was the first time Alonso's actually criticised Aston Martin since he's been there. You know, he's not scared of calling out a GP2 car when he was at McLaren. But it felt like, you know, he was really being nice to Sir Lawrence Stroll. He's not a Sir, by the way, but to Lawrence Stroll and Aston Martin team. But today he said this car is undrivable, and he's certainly made it look undrivable as well. Especially with no Lance Stroll there, everything was dependent on Alonso performing well. And he did to some aspects, but that car also didn't look great around that track.
No, it did not. It was a shame to see, because I remember, I think in the press conference on Thursday, they were talking about Alonso potentially winning the race. But yeah, it just wasn't the weekend for Aston Martin.
No, so we had what developed to be a fantastic battle. So we had Sainz hanging on to first place, and he had the three Brits behind him. So Russell, Norris and Hamilton, all within 1 second of each other. Now, this was going on for quite a while, really. And it just seemed, well, we know that Sainz was holding them back. So he was going as slow as he could without losing the position to ensure his tyres were going to get to the end of the race and also to help Leclerc. What was your take on all of that? Because it really was feeling like, you know, we had Russell on the radio saying, oh yeah, he's probably going two seconds slower a lap than he can. But why didn't you go and get him then?
It was really interesting to see because, yeah, like you say, once they'd overtaken the Red Bulls and the Red Bulls had pitted, it was Sainz, Norris, Russell and Hamilton, the top four. And it was such a good battle. I mean, at some points I was behind him behind my hands because it did make me a bit nervous as to whether one of them was going to crash out.
I didn't know what you were going to be behind then.
But it was really good to see. And I think testament to Sainz because, yes, he started on pole and then he won the race. So some may say, oh, it was an easy race because like he didn't have to overtake anyone. But this race was about management and defending, but also attacking. And he managed to manage his tyres really well. He managed to defend against those behind. And like towards the end of the race, he worked with Norris, who is a competitor at the moment. Yes, they're former teammates, but it's Ferrari versus McLaren. And he helped Norris, but he also helped himself. And I feel like throughout the whole race, Sainz was playing this game and no one else could match him. Because like you say, Russell was like, oh, well, I think he could like hold in 2 seconds back or something. And it's like, well, like you say, Russell, why don't you go get him? And it almost seemed like Russell was not afraid, but he just wasn't ready to attack. And then at some points, Hamilton was faster than Russell based on the speeds that the broadcast were showing.
But yeah, I mean, throughout the weekend, it did feel like Lewis, throughout the race, it did feel like Lewis had the upper hand on Russell, and he was a lot more comfortable in the race setup than George. And it felt like almost those Mercedes were the wrong way around, but obviously that's because of qualifying and then of it being a harder place to overtake. But when Ocon decided to grind to a halt, not that he decided to, but his car gave up on him, that's when things got really interesting. And we had the VSC out and it didn't look like anyone was going to pit, but they did.
They certainly did. So Ocon pulled over on lap 43, which was a real shame because it is his birthday today and then he had to retire from the race.
But it means he can eat his cake earlier. What one bonus, right?
Always look on the bright side. But yeah, lap 45, Mercedes decided to take the gamble and they pitted both drivers to go on a fresh set of mediums. Now, obviously, over the weekend, the Mercedes did save an extra set of mediums for both drivers, which is where this gamble came to their advantage, because it meant they were on fresher tyres. And the way that they closed to those in front, it was really quick. And then once they'd overtaken Leclerc in that, Leclerc was like 11 seconds or something behind them at one point, which was bizarre because he was in front beforehand. But yeah, the gamble that Mercedes took really paid off, and I'm glad it did.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a shock to me because the VSC had come out, so I thought, all right, I'm going to walk out of the room for a minute. Then I hear that they're double stacking. I thought, oh my God, what's going on here? Why on earth would they do that? But because obviously they had such a big gap, but they then also needed to make that gap up, and it was the speed in which Mercedes were able to get to the back of Leclerc. What was it? It was 19-second gap, I think, when they came out of the pits, and it took six laps. I mean, that is incredible pace, and it does show that, you know, during the race, I believe Mercedes had the best car. It was absolutely evident. It was just that pole, the qualifying position, right?
Definitely, because this race was supposed to be a one-stop race. That's what they had predicted. But Mercedes did a two-stop. Like you say, they had enough of a gap to then go into the pits, come out into clean air, and then make up that time. And it was so quick. And the way that they attacked as well throughout the entirety of the race, their overtakes, yes, some were difficult, but others seemed to be quite effortless. So Sainz was on pole, but his tyres went off towards the end. Mercedes, they just seemed, well, apart from Russell on the final lap, they seemed to have it all together and it worked really well. And considering where they started this year, saying this car is awful, it's one of the worst cars, it's undrivable, to where they are now. Like, it was really good.
Yeah, and again, it was a complexity of this race that I can't really remember seeing in a while, where because Carlos Sainz was keeping the grid so compressed, no one could make that surprise pit stop or even gamble it, because, you know, if you pit from P3, you're going to come out last and you're not going to come back through the field. So, you know, it was an element of a race that I've not seen in quite a while, but that VSC just allowed Mercedes to use that set of mediums that they'd been saving. And all weekend they kept banging on about this, their extra set of mediums. I thought, well, it's one stop race. You're not going to need them, but it was genius in the end. So you have mentioned the battle and especially the last lap chaos. I've not enjoyed sort of a 5-10 lap battle this season as much as this. This was absolutely brilliant. So they were all neck and neck. You've got Carlos Sainz in the lead by just a fraction, with Norris behind him, Russell, and then Hamilton. And what was that? About a second between them all, I think. Maybe two seconds.
Yeah, I think it was like 1.7 seconds separated them all. And then Leclerc was a bit further back.
Yeah, Leclerc was about a lap down. But this battle, and Abby, did you think that Russell was going to be able to get the win? Let's say that, because the commentary on Sky Sports UK certainly was suggesting, Martin Brundle suggesting that George had this.
I think in the initial laps of the final few laps, I would say yes. But then it became clear that Hamilton had the faster car. He had more pace, and he said it over the radio, Russell needs to pick up the pace. Unfortunately, he didn't pick up the pace and ended up in the wall, which did give Hamilton the podium. But it was such a close call, and I couldn't call who would win. I thought Norris might take it and get his maiden win because of how close he was to Sainz in that, but Sainz just did an amazing drive and played a great game to take the win easily. And it was just so exciting to see, having that battle for the lead, that scrap for the podium places. We haven't had that all season because no other team has won. It's either been Perez or majority of the time, apart from two races, Max. But it was so exciting to have this, is it going to be Science? Is it going to be Norris? And then the commentators going, well, I think Mercedes could take it. It could be an all-British podium. It could be a Mercedes 1-2. It was unknown, but so exciting.
Yeah, and I think on paper, if you were looking at this, it would have been Russell, Hamilton. Russell taking the win with Hamilton behind him. But the game that Sainz was playing by giving Norris the DRS so that they were so close together, but still just having that little bit in the bag where he could keep Norris behind, just meant that Russell couldn't, there was just no space. And this was... I feel like George Russell, I feel like he could have done better. And I don't think having Lewis Hamilton behind you ready to take that place either was helping him. And it was like he was so focused in front, so focused behind, that really there was no brain capacity left. And, you know, we saw that with his accident hitting the wall on the last lap. But Lewis looked ready to pounce. And I think that was really what ultimately cost him that, because... had Lewis got him, I don't know what would have happened. But ultimately, I think it's down to Sainz and his amazing management of that scenario. Because on paper, that Ferrari shouldn't have won. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. And I think having Lewis behind and knowing that he was ready to pounce the moment you make a mistake probably added a lot of pressure on Russell, because you could hear over the radio throughout the whole race, he was going for that win. He wanted that win. And yes, he didn't get it. And he did make a mistake by hitting the wall. But Lando also hit the wall a moment before. And I think he said in his post-race interview that George was probably getting a bit too close and wanted to copy Lando to get ahead, but copied him a bit too much and hit the wall and went straight on instead of following the corner. But yeah, Sainz, to be able to focus on his own drive, managing his own tyres and keeping the lead, but then also focusing on Lando and being like, okay, well, I can help Lando by doing this, which would then help me. It's incredible. And I think a lot of the time, Sainz can be an underrated driver. And when you think of Ferrari, you think, oh, Charles Leclerc. But Sainz is an incredible driver, and he has shown that in these past two races.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the tide is starting to change, really. These last two races, Carlos Sainz has just been on form. And yeah, his performance today was just utterly incredible. And I don't think anyone else deserved to win that race other than him. It was absolutely mega. So it was Carlos Sainz that won the Singapore Grand Prix with Lando Norris behind. And because George Russell decided to put it in the wall, he lost out on a lot of points for Mercedes today and himself. And Lewis Hamilton finished off the podium. Now, Carlos Sainz won driver of the day. We're going to do ours in a minute. Abby, would you like to run through the rest of the order?
Yes. So, as you said, Sainz, Norris, Hamilton on the podium. It was then Leclerc in fourth, Verstappen made it into fifth, Gasly in sixth, Piastri in seventh, Perez in eighth, Lawson in ninth, scoring his maiden points in F1, and Magnussen rounding out the top 10. And the drivers that DNF'd were Russell, Bottas, Ocon and Tsunoda.
What happened to Bottas? I don't think I ever saw that.
I think it was a mechanical issue, potentially. I feel like they said over the broadcast, but I can't remember right at this moment. But he pulled off and his car was pulled off safely, so there were no reason for yellow flags.
Yeah, that was really lucky, because it was near the climax of the race and the last thing we wanted was a safety car at that point. Okay, let's move on to your driver of the day, Abby. I'm going to... Ladies first. You can go for the obvious one, even though you're probably going to give it to George Russell.
I did contemplate giving it to Russell before his crash. However, I am going to give it to Sainz, because he has been amazing all weekend. And just the game that he played and the intelligence that he drove with today was incredible.
I would agree with you, but as we know, we all have to pick a different driver. So second, I would give it to Lando Norris. It was close between him and Lawson, if I'm honest, but I gave it to Lawson last week. So it's going to be Lando Norris this week. Yeah, again, I don't think he should have finished where he was. And that showed that's absolute testament to his driving and also his teamwork with Carlos. I think them two being so close and, you know, having such a good relationship, I mean, we'll never know, but could there have sort of been a subconscious, you know, gentleman's agreement where we're going to get this, right? We're going to make sure that we get one and two, and maybe Sainz didn't feel as threatened. I don't know. Do you think that, or do you think Lando's a racing driver? He would have took it if he could.
Potentially. But I do think if the opportunity arose, Lando would be like, okay, Carlos, you've won before. I haven't won. Let me have my race win.
So would you like to do the drivers and teams championship standings, Abby?
Yes. So Verstappen is still in first, but whilst he would have been able to win the championship in Japan next weekend, after today's race, he cannot. So the championship will continue. Perez is in second. Hamilton has made it into third, ahead of Alonso in fourth. Sainz is then in fifth, ahead of Leclerc in sixth. Russell is in seventh, Norris in eighth, Stroll in ninth, and Gasly in tenth, only 3 points ahead of Piastri.
Now, I don't know if this is factual, but I'm pretty sure Max would have to DNF in every single race not to win this championship now. It would be something like that. So it's not exactly like it's still open.
It could happen. He could not score any points.
It didn't even happen today, Abby.
No, I know. But, you know, it can happen. Logically, it won't happen.
Well, yeah, one thing I haven't quite figured out in my brain, I was thinking this earlier, I may sound like a complete idiot, but here it goes, is I feel like Max has had a far more dominant season this season. How is it that he won it in Japan last year, but won't this time?
I don't know, because Red Bull had a lot more DNFs last year as well.
Maybe because we missed Imola. Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe. I'm not sure. If there's any real stat geeks out there, please let me know. Would you like to do the constructors, which has shifted a bit?
Yes. So, Red Bull are still in the lead. Mercedes are second. Ferrari are third, ahead of Aston Martin in fourth. McLaren are looking to have cemented fifth place quite comfortably. Alpine are in sixth, Williams are in seventh, Haas are now in eighth, Alfa Romeo are in ninth, and AlphaTauri are 5 points behind in tenth.
So it is the Japanese Grand Prix next weekend. We're on a double header. The Japanese Grand Prix is, it's a classic. It's one that I love. It doesn't necessarily work with these cars as well, but I'm still looking forward to it. Abby, are you looking forward to the Japanese Grand Prix? And would you like us, dare I say, I don't want to sound biased, but would you like a repeat of this weekend where anyone can win?
Yes, I am looking forward to it. And yes, I would. Because we said on the podcast that went out before the Singapore Grand Prix, we both said, Ollie, that we had a good feeling about Singapore and we didn't think it would be a Red Bull win. And it wasn't. So I have a good feeling about Japan and I don't think it will be a Red Bull win.
I have a great feeling about Japan and I don't think it'll be a Red Bull win. There we go.
We're going to be proved wrong now.
Of course we are.
It's going to be Max pole, Max win straight away.
Well, it's back to a very, very aero circuit. So, you know, on paper, if nothing has changed on that Red Bull, then they should be straight back to the top. But only time will tell. We will see you next week for the Japanese Grand Prix review. But we'll be back before then. So don't panic. You don't have to wait an entire week to hear us talk about F1. But that is all for today. Abby, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me and hosting as always.
Thank you very much. And we will see you next time. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out and away we go.
Sports Social Podcast Network.